The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. G'day, Alex. How are you doing, mate?
G-Day, Pete. I'm doing very well, man.
G-Day. I like that. I thought you were going to say that had something to do with Zero Day or Day Zero or whatever that was yesterday. I don't know whether you're up to
that. What was Day Zero? Okay. What have I missed now?
Who was it? Jack from Twitter, Jack Dorsey.
He did a
tweet that said Zero Day yesterday, whatever that
meant. That probably in relation to the stupid bill that got passed in America.
I'm wearing a t-shirt just in celebration of that today. It's actually I don't know whether you could see it, but it's a pig with the American flag looks like, over it.
Is that to do with Porkfest or?
Yeah, it is actually. It's so funny because I have these shirts made up for us from Flavor Gallery that do the Food is Medicine and the Evolve shirts for us, and they're based in LA, mm-hmm. and their whole setup is for chef t-shirts for American chefs, and this is one of the most famous chefs in America that likes to work with pork, and I wore this t-shirt on the TV show I used to do on PBS for America, and I've had emails from people going, you're actually making fun of America and calling us pigs. I said, no, it's an American chef that loves to cook pigs and he's celebrating the American pig with this shirt. It's all about perception, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
And the underlying beliefs or the beliefs that we've picked up over time and our insecurities, I think, too, and our fears of what things mean. Because for you, Bitcoin is something and for others, it is completely something different. And maybe do you want to do a little recap of the bill that just went through that got approved by the Senate today?
Yeah, I mean, typical government, you know, there's something that's been built without any input from them and no need for them and like literally to circumvent them. And they laughed at it for the last 12 years. And now they realized, oh, well, fuck. We can't turn this shit off. So I know, let's go tax it. So it's just, what else? Like, I mean, if there was ever a definition for a mafia racket, that's what it is. Like think of two, you know, like a butcher and a grocer, doing business. The mafia comes, knocks on the door, says, we're not going to add any value to what you're doing, but you're going to give us 20% of everything you make, or we're going to come and beat you up. That's effectively the government's purpose. And that's all it was. It was just a bunch of idiots. I think Ted Cruz did a little talk on the floor, you know, and he just said, is it out of the 100 senators in the room today? He said, I would be willing to bet my career, basically, that if I asked any of them to come up and say one or two sentences about what, you know, Bitcoin or cryptocurrency is, not even five of them would be able to get up and actually perform that. And we are about to pass a bill to regulate something we can't even string into a sentence. So the thing is, this doesn't affect Bitcoin whatsoever. What it does is it affects the individuals in America who want to get access to Bitcoin and use Bitcoin, and the businesses who might want to service American customers. So all this is just bureaucrats making it more difficult for the people who they're supposed to be serving to use products and services that they might want to use. So, I mean, you know, Bitcoin doesn't give a shit. All it does is it hurts American people. So it's classic government.
Mm. Let's have a chat about what you wanted to talk about today, which was about storage, I believe, and wallets, and because we haven't explored that properly yet.
Yeah, we haven't. I mean, I get a lot of good feedback from the episodes that we do together, and you know, people hitting me up all the time saying, "Oh, you know, I've started buying Bitcoin, and you know, I'm concerned about, you know, the government taking it from me, the government taxing it. You know, what happens if, you know, the exchange gets shut down, or you know, how do I store it, or how do I make it safe?" So I thought it'd probably be useful for us to do a discussion about that, to kind of talk through some of the concepts, so that people can better understand what it means to actually own your Bitcoin, as opposed to just doing the purchase. So I think we've kind of talked about it in an old episode where we tried to talk about, like, you know, nodes and miners and exchanges and the brokers and all this sort of shit. So today, I think what we should probably focus more on is just what it means to take custody of your Bitcoin, and help people understand why Bitcoin is a bearer asset, and not a IOU, effectively. So, do you have any initial questions you want to kick off with, or do you want me to just sort of start digging?
Yeah, start digging, but also use Amber as an example of how people uh-huh. purchase Bitcoin and why you would encourage people to get their Bitcoin off your platform, if that's what you're basically saying.
Yeah,
because that might sound really strange for people going, why would a guy that's created a business for people to buy Bitcoin and store it on his in his business to then encourage people to take it out of his business? So explain that theory as well.
Absolutely. Okay. So there's a term. So let's start with the first definition. The idea of a bearer asset, and the idea of an IOU, right? So when people have money in the bank, the money in the bank, and you know, there's all these anecdotes that fly around, but effectively the money in the bank is simply a debit or a credit. I can't remember which side of the ledger it sits on the bank's balance sheet, right? It's actually not your money. You think it's your money, but you have an IOU for that money. In fact, even legal tender, the bill, the cash that you have in your wallet, you think it's money, but it's effectively an IOU. It's a redeemable piece of paper. And you know, when you look at the original dollar bills that were out, you know, it was like a pound, for example, in the UK was originally it was a promissory note to be able to exchange your pound of paper for a pound of silver. That was originally what paper money is. So paper money is also an IOU. It's a promise for the exchange by the issuing central bank for actual money, and money being defined as the bearer asset that, you know, the fiat money is supposed to be representative of, which in today's day and age is primarily gold. But as we know, since 1971, no paper money has actually been pegged to gold anymore. So we just have all this fucking fake funny money flying around. So it's not only an IOU, but it's an IOU on the promise of a central bank and a pack of bureaucrats. So it's like a, first of all, it's an IOU. Second of all, it's a, you know, so if an IOU is a promise, it's a promise on a promise. So it's like as dumb as it can possibly get, right? And then, you know, what's in the bank is a promise of a promise of a promise. So it's like it's that far removed from you actually owning it. So this is why, you know, a lot of people who are gold bugs or silver bugs and all this sort of stuff, when they hold, they tell you to go buy gold and silver and they tell you to buy physical, right? Because you actually own it, you hold it. That is the bearer asset itself. Gold is one of the few things on the planet that, you know, as an asset that you can actually hold. Like even real estate, I mean, you might be able to sit on it, but you don't actually bear the asset because, you know, the asset is just in a register of titles. And the bearer of those titles, the controller of those titles is actually the government, the state. So you own the property or the land to the extent that the government upholds private property rights. So, you know, even that's a tenuous thing. I mean, particularly in more broken civilizations and jurisdictions and countries and nations. And, you know, as we're seeing, you know, the world get dumber and dumber, you know, they'll continue to break more and more property rights. I mean, you know, your body's not even your property anymore. So, you know, there's very few things left on the planet that are bearer assets in nature. You know, physical metals are one of those things, but Bitcoin is also a bearer asset. And this is one of the really important things. So there's a saying that floats around in the Bitcoin space. You hear a lot of Bitcoiners talk about it. Recently, a couple of my friends, Gigi, Robert Breedlove, John Vallis, and James, who I just introduced you to, the filmmaker, they did a podcast with Jordan Peterson, and it just went live, I think, a couple of days ago. And they were orange pilling him, taking through the Bitcoin process. And
let's do orange pill just for the people, because we've heard of red pill. Explain what red pill, black pill, if you know what that means, and orange pill means.
I guess, yeah, red pill is, you know, more conservative thinking, you know, and sort of like it comes from the Matrix, you know, red pill. You take the red pill and you go and see the truth, basically. The blue pill is, you know, aligned with the Democrats, the left, and, you know, being a sheep. Black pill is like, you know, it depends. I think some people think black pill is kind of like Antifa, but, you know, some people call me black pilled, which is like, you know, fuck the system completely. And then orange pill is, you know, the color of the Bitcoin logo is orange. So, you know, we in the Bitcoin space call it taking the orange pill because, yeah, whilst taking the red pill is useful because it wakes you up, there is no solution. You know, the in the realm of the red pill, it's just like complaining about how bad shit is. Whereas in the realm of the orange pill, we've actually got a solution that is feasible.
So you're talking about Jordan Peterson and your mates having a chat with him and orange pilling him.
Yes, indeed. So that's what Bitcoiners do. And that's what you and I have been doing. So this is the 11th episode. I've been orange pilling you and the audience and basically proposing what is the most important solution of all to all of the stupidity that's happening in the world today. Like if we value freedom and sovereignty in any capacity, we need to move the world towards a Bitcoin standard because all the other kicking, screaming, shouting, talking we do is irrelevant because the engine that drives the tyranny is the fact that, you know, these idiots can fund themselves at our expense. So we will never, you can never win a war. You can never win a battle of this kind when you're feeding your enemy. Like, and that's what we're doing. So Bitcoin starves the enemy. That's why it is fundamentally the only solution that counts. So that's, you know, the raison d'etre behind, you know, orange pilling. So anyway, they spoke to Jordan about the not your keys, not your coins, and the idea of Bitcoin as a bearer asset. And what that means is like Bitcoin transforms, I guess, you know, there's so many metaphysical layers here that I could go through to discuss, you know, Bitcoin's importance. But when it comes to owning Bitcoin, you've got the purchasing phase, Then you've got the custody phase. And the custody of the Bitcoin is defined by who controls the private key associated with that Bitcoin. Okay. So as I've explained, I think in a previous show, is the Bitcoin always remains on the network. All the Bitcoin is there, never moves off the network. The only thing that happens is, I think I used this analogy last time, is that you've got these kind of like letterboxes, you know, and there's an infinite number practically of letterboxes on the Bitcoin network, where on the front of the letterbox is your public address. Anyone can see that. And, you know, there's an amount of Bitcoin in each of these letterboxes. And, you know, a letterbox is just a number generated that is part of the, you know, the set of large numbers in the possible series of numbers in Bitcoin. And
when you say they can see your public keys, it doesn't say Alex Svetsky on it. It's just you're
just
anonymous.
A string. Exactly. It's a string of numbers and digits. So Bitcoin doesn't recognize man, woman, black, color, race, time, doesn't recognize any of that shit. It just recognizes that there is a key, that letterbox has a public address, and there is a private key that's associated to that. And it only that private key can open that box and push the Bitcoin to another address, right? That's literally how the whole thing functions. So you got, you know, in Bitcoin, you have a public private key pair. Public key is your address. The private key gives you control of that Bitcoin. So what that means then is he who controls the private key controls that piece of Bitcoin. And that means by definition, by holding the private key, you actually have a bearer asset. Bitcoin is a digital bearer asset. There is no other, like, for you to try and randomly generate the string that is the private key that's associated with that public key, if you sat there trying to guess what that number was, you could technically do that, but the heat death of the universe would come before you figured that number out. That's how many combinations there is of numbers for you to break the relationship between the public and private key, right? So this is the encryption standard, the law of large numbers that is used, that sets the relationship between the public and private key pair. So when you, so think of it as your private key is the only lock, is the only key in the universe that can unlock that letterbox with that amount of Bitcoin in it. Okay. So then the next question is, how do you store that key? Because I think I've said this also in a previous show, is if you had all the gold, like if you had $1 billion worth of gold and you stored it in this incredible safe that nothing in the universe could open it except for the key, but then you put the key on your kitchen bench, you know, you went on a holiday, someone broke into your house, took the key, took your gold, you're not going to say, fuck, the vault is broken. No. You're the idiot who left the key on the front, you know, the kitchen bench. So what matters then, you know, with something like Bitcoin is the storage of that key. So this is where we start to move into, you know, the realm of wallets. So are you with me so far? Like any questions, any comments?
Yeah, I'm with you. But again, let's bring back how, say, Amber, for instance, or an exchange where people have purchased it. So, because people are like, well, if I purchase it from Amber or Coinbase or whatever it may be, they're holding it. So just, again, it's just explain that if you purchase off one of these exchanges, you don't actually hold the keys.
Yes, exactly. So okay, let's use an analogy that people might, you know, understand a little bit easier is, You may or may not have purchased some gold physically in your time. So, you know, you go out to a gold dealer and you go in there and you say, look, I want to buy, you know, a brick of gold, you know, and maybe a couple kilos of silver. You go in there and let's say the bill is $20,000. You buy that. And then the gold dealer says, hey, look, you can take this with you home. So you have self-custody of it. Or we can store it here for you in our vault, and we can keep it safe for you. And, you know, maybe we'll charge a fee for that, you know, $100 a year or whatever it is, but we will store the gold for you so it's nice and safe. So Amber is like that gold dealer, except we're not selling you gold, we're selling you Bitcoin. And what we encourage you to do is, in the beginning, when you buy the Bitcoin on Amber, we effectively store it for you in what's called a multi-signature vault. So there's multiple keys that are required to unlock the Bitcoin. That is the basically the gold standard, or the safest way to store Bitcoin. And we'll get to that later on. I'll describe how multi-signature actually works on Bitcoin. But we do that as a standard for you. And we actually give you that service for free because we know a lot of people are not yet comfortable understanding how to safely store their key for their own Bitcoin wallet, right? Because if they make a mistake with that, there's no one you can run to say, hey, I fucked up, give me my money back. Like, you know, because remember, it's a bearer asset. It reminds me of that Spider-Man saying, which is, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like, you don't, this is not an IOU from the bank. When you withdraw your Bitcoin to your own wallet, you own it and you have full control and ownership of it, and you have full responsibility of fucking it up too. So what we do is we take people through a process, which is on Amber, the first time you come and buy, we multi-sig cold store it on your behalf for you. And then you in the Amber app can see what your total balance is. And then we encourage you to learn about Bitcoin, to understand what it means to either use a mobile wallet, hardware wallet, or whatever, and learn how to store your key safely so that when you withdraw the Bitcoin to your own wallet, you have full control of it. It's in your hands. Nobody can take it from you, assuming you've secured your key well. And you are the sovereign owner of your wealth at that point in time. Amber is no longer the custodian. So the custody moves from us to you. And we encourage everyone to do that. Now, we just encourage people to do it when they're confident enough, you know, and maybe start with a small amount and then, you know, start moving more and more off. As the reason this is important is as the world gets crazier and crazier, as the world gets dumber and dumber, as you see, like the regulation in the US is, you know, one example of this is, you know, this is a light regulation where they've just randomly thrown the word broker across all sorts of different apps. And, you know, it's going to basically fuck up the privacy for American people, because if, you know, any app that you're using, they're going to be forced to give the US government your information. Even, and you know, it's like, this is where it's really stupid, is that even if you're a wallet provider who doesn't know anything about your user, the US government's going to be asking you to give information on the user that you don't fucking have. So what's going to happen, unfortunately, for US residents is that wallet providers are going to be like, all right, sorry, fuck it, we're not going to service US customers. So it's like literally government's just like hurting their own people. But that aside, you know, government will do what government does, which is continue to try and rob, steal, and hurt their people. So at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if the government goes knocking on the doors of exchanges, especially the bigger ones, saying, hey, give us, we don't like this person. Pete Evans is someone that's on our list, and we would like you to freeze his assets. So, you know, they could go and tell us to do that. And we might say, well, no, that's not right. He's one of our customers. And then they'll say, well, if you don't do that, we'll shut your business down. So then what does a business do? They're like, fuck, all right, we'll freeze his assets. And then you, Pete, fuck, right? So you can't pull your own money up. So this is where, like, if we were living in a, you know, in a world in which, you know, government didn't have that kind of overreach, it would generally be fine to just keep your, you know, your key stored with an exchange, whether it's Amber, whether it's some other provider, whatever the case is. But as the world gets more and more insane, your ability to be sovereign, your ability to bear the asset yourself, your ability to own your wealth yourself becomes increasingly important. So when you have custody of your Bitcoin, there is no power in the world that can take it from you. They can't mathematically, like, There is no force that they can use to break the encryption between your public and private key pair, so long as you have the private key safely and securely stored somewhere out of the reach of anybody. And that's where the power of Bitcoin lies as sovereign money. There is no other money. There is no other asset that is as good as that. You know, people out there tell me, oh yeah, but gold, you know, you can store it somewhere and you've got it and you know, it's hard for them to take it. Man, you can store $1 billion worth of Bitcoin on a fucking string on a piece of paper. Go try and store $1 billion worth of gold. Where are you going to put it? It's impossible. Like, so the fact that Bitcoin is digital and it's a digital bearer asset gives it, you know, portability, durability, and storability like nothing ever. And this is what makes it a superior place to store the product of your labor or store your wealth. And it's unbeatable in that capacity. So like Bitcoin makes money information, and you can't stop information. Like you can't take the number zero. Like you can't cancel words. You can't cancel numbers. Like it doesn't exist. Like they're things that exist in the physical realm. There's no current universe that can stop that. So this is where, you know, over time, as you know, people start to understand Bitcoin more, and as they want to become sovereign individuals, they want to purchase their Bitcoin. So that happens to exchange or broker, and then they want to learn how to set up their own wallet. And a wallet is merely a storage device, not for your Bitcoin, but for your keys, right? So when people talk about, oh, you know, I'm storing my Bitcoin on the wallet, you know, you're not storing your Bitcoin on your wallet, you're storing your keys, which give you control of your Bitcoin on a wallet. Okay, so that's the important thing to understand. The wallet is just allows you to interface with the Bitcoin network. It's not actually where the Bitcoin is. The Bitcoin is always on the network. So you've got broker exchange, you've got your wallet, and then you want to move your Bitcoin over, or you want to move your keys, sorry, over to your wallet. So that's any questions on that so far?
No, not at all. I'm understanding.
Okay.
I'm going with the flow here.
Cool. So the next, let's talk about how the key situation works. So in 2011, 2012, I think it was, there was a Bitcoin improvement proposal called BIP39. So BIP stands for Bitcoin Improvement Proposal, where people working on the Bitcoin protocol, you know, there was a suggestion put forward. So the way changes happen to the Bitcoin protocol is engineers from all around the world, they put up proposals. We're up to, I think, BIP 300 and something, right? So they put up a proposal to, you know, make an improvement to how the Bitcoin network might run. And then that proposal was reviewed by everyone around the world. It's all open source. And then if it gets enough consensus and if it's backwards compatible, meaning that it, you know, complies with the existing rules of all the nodes, you know, that can be built, tested, and then deployed. And it usually takes a long time for anything to get deployed. But I'm pretty sure it was around 2011, 2012, there was BIP39, which, you know, it proposed a way to codify the public private key pair in what's called a mnemonic. So mnemonic. So the word mnemonic means just like a phrase, right? Something to remember something else by. So it was a proposal to codify public private key pairs in a phrase, in a set of words in a particular order, such that the storage of public private key pairs could be done a lot easier. So instead of having to write down this string of numbers and letters where, you know, if you fucked up one number, you're screwed, you know, you can't get access to it. Could we codify that into a simple set of words, like 12 words or 16 words or 24 words, 12, 18 or 24, into a simple set of words that when those words are run through some software, which is standard across all Bitcoin wallets now, actually mathematically derive all of the public private key pairs associated with the wallet. And yes, there is. It's all math. It's not any funny, you know, it's not like some proprietary technologies. Like, so you can take words and the I think it's something to do with the hexadecimal value of, you know, each letter in the word in a particular order, produces a set of, you know, millions of private public key pairs associated with the order of those words, right? And that is effectively how the storage of your private key occurs today. So when you go and set up a wallet, be it a wallet that you download on your phone. So like,
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.